So Kate started us off 2 weeks ago, introducing us to this idea of relationships and a little bit about what we're going to talk about over the coming weeks. So I'm just going to jump in. First of all, relationships don't work. I'm sure you've all experienced this, right? Relationships don't work. And these are the words, actually, of Charlotte Joko Beck, a very influential Zen teacher who founded and taught at the Zen Center of San Diego. And she died a number of years ago, about 2011. And she left several pretty strong books. Her writings are pretty interesting to read. And I agree with her. Relationships in general, don't work. And I use the word work here, meaning something like something that gives me satisfaction that I expect. Some relationships, of course, we're born into. Others we choose. And relationships do bring us joy, companionship, connection, security and love, but they also bring us pain, anger, shame, and grief. At some point, it seems, most relationships go askew, no matter what kind of relationship it is. And the expectations and hopes that we brought into the relationship, whether they were conscious or perhaps not conscious, those expectations are no longer met. Our assumption is that this unpleasantness that has arisen should not be there. It doesn't fit with the picture that we have of relationship. This unpleasantness, minor or severe, obscures my ideal life. And this is especially the case with idealized notions of romantic love, those kind of relationships that we enter into, full of intense feelings. And full of strong expectations of our partners. And we experience dissatisfaction quite strongly in a romantic relationship when sexual and emotional needs are not met, or when the economic and social aspirations maybe that we have are never actualized, never realized. The relationship, so sweet at the beginning, starts to become a source of suffering and discontent. And this can be the case in myriad kind of variations with our other relationships as well, not just romantic relationships, but friendships, connections with parents, with children or siblings. Whenever we enter into a relationship with a gaining idea, perhaps hoping to find that which is going to change my life, and that gaining idea somehow that changes in this other person, things will start to go sour sooner or later. I've noticed in my own relationships, and perhaps you have as well, it's usually the other person's fault. Funny how that works. The relationship would be fine if only she would pay more attention to me. If only he would not drink as much. If she would take turns doing the laundry. If he would listen to me more when I'm upset. If she would, you can fill in the blank. My ideal life is thwarted because of the other person, because of something outside of myself. Because isn't there at least a subtle assumption that relationships should be smooth and bumpless, bringing ease and solidarity? And how painful when our assumptions, subtle or perhaps strong, when those assumptions are not met. Relationships don't work. Or rather, relationships take work. Rainer Maria Rilke, the poet, Austrian poet, wrote in his classic Letters to a Young Poet, "To love is good. To love is good too, love being difficult. For one human being to love another, that is perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks. The ultimate, the last test and proof, the work for which all other work is but preparation. For this reason, young people who are beginners in everything cannot yet know love. They have to learn it. Young people need to learn it," Rilke tells us. And I would add, this is a lifelong learning, this task. I find myself in my 60s still learning to know love. As Rilke points out, knowing love is, to quote him, "perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks." Indeed, more than a few of us will at some point give up, thinking, what's the point? It doesn't work. A solitary life may seem appealing at times, but wait. Relationships truly are a part of what we need to fully understand who we are. Relationships give us the conditions that we need to deeply mature and take our place as loving and open-hearted adults. A true or wholesome relationship is not a crutch. And while confusion and hurt may arise, a wholesome relationship provides the conditions for us to expand and develop our capacities as human beings. It's not too difficult to begin a relationship. In fact, it seems these days easier than ever, right? You just have an app. Begin relationship. Meet you downtown, 5 minutes. But how do we deal with the whispering voice calculating what we should get out of the relationship? Am I getting it up? Am I getting enough? Just as we learned a bit earlier, Rilke tells his young poet friend that to fall in love, becoming infatuated, is relatively easy. But to keep loving someone, especially someone we live with day after day, year after year, is the most difficult of all our tasks. Many eventually give up on romantic relationships, finding the terrain too mountainous. The wild, and too mountainous and wild to really navigate. And while romantic or intimate relationships are fraught, all relationships can be difficult. We all know or have experienced the challenges of friendships, family relations, relationships with coworkers and bosses. All of those, too, have their challenges. Now, when we look at the early Buddhist texts, the Buddha didn't offer, it seems, a lot of advice, or at least detailed advice, on relationships. But there is one, I think, really interesting story that parallels a dispute that we can easily recognize that's happened over and over again in our own lives. And this is from the Kosambiya Sutta, and the story takes place at Kosambi. So here's the story. An honored teacher of the monks left some unused water in the latrine jar. The purpose of the water was to wash oneself after having used the toilet, and custom dictated at the time that the water after being used to wash oneself, the custom dictated that the jar should be emptied after use so that the next person could fill it with fresh water for his own use. This is the equivalent, perhaps, of replacing the toilet paper roll when you've used the last of the toilet paper, right? You fill the jar up with water you empty it so the next person can fill it up for clean water for his own use. So at any rate, the offender forgot to empty the jar. It was just a matter of forgetting. So he and his supporters did not think he needed to apologize for that act of forgetting. Others in the community disagreed. And before long, the community was in a no-holds-barred conflict. Right? Isn't that the case, right, in relationships?
And this was a bunch of monks.
This was a bunch of monks, right? And I can say from my own experience, you know, when you go and find the toilet paper roll is empty, how easy it is, right? Why did you forget? Why didn't you replace the toilet paper after you finished it? Or, of course, the famous not putting the cap on the toothpaste, et cetera, et cetera. So the Buddha, hearing about the bickering, quickly traveled to Kosambini, which was not far from where he was staying, and said to the community this. So, monks, when you take to quarreling and brawling and are deep in disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers, isn't that a neat? Stabbing each other with verbal daggers. On that occasion, you do not maintain acts of loving kindness by body, speech, and mind, in public and in private towards your companions in the holy life. Misguided men, what can you possibly know? What can you possibly see that you take to quarreling and brawling and are in deep disputes, stabbing each other with verbal daggers over a jar not emptied of water? That you can neither convince each other nor be convinced by others. That you can neither persuade each other nor be persuaded by others. Isn't that the case when we bicker with someone close to us? Very seldom are we persuaded by their argument. Misguided men, that will lead to your harm and suffering for a long time. Well, ain't that a truth? Right? Those kind of grudges that we hold for a long time over something so silly, or perhaps not silly. So anyway, maybe you recognize something of this quality in episodes that you've experienced in your own relationships. I was struck by the Buddha's comment here. You can neither convince each other nor be convinced by others. So tenaciously are we hanging on to our view of the argument. My own self-righteousness. So in this piece of writing, the Buddha goes on to say this. Then the Blessed One addressed the monks thus. Monks, there are six memorable qualities that create love and respect and are conducive to helpfulness, to non-dispute, to concord, to unity. And what are these six qualities? Here, a monk maintains bodily acts of loving kindness in both public and in private towards his companions in the holy life. Again, a monk maintains verbal acts of loving kindness, both in public and in private, towards his companions in the holy life. And again, the monk maintains mental acts of loving kindness, both in public and in private, towards his companions in the holy life. Loving kindness, both in private and in public, speech, in our physical actions, and in our thoughts. This is what we cultivate. Beautiful words, but easier said than done, eh? Relationships, all relationships, take work. The work is this: to clearly see the nature of our own suffering, the truth of who we are, of who the other is, and the reality of the relationship. To see clearly the truth. The first noble truth that the Buddha taught after his awakening under the Bodhi tree was the truth of suffering, or the truth of dissatisfaction, to help us step back from automatically blaming our partner, sibling, parent, or friend when the relationship starts to go south. Dissatisfaction is simply present in every life. It's part of the human condition. And we are each tasked with seeing this clearly and learning how to let go, or to simply be with or stop creating the suffering, depending on the case, whether the suffering is in ourselves or our suffering is in others. Now, this is not to say the problems in relationships are not real, and maybe there is sufficient reasons that it's time to break the relationship, to leave a relationship, to let it end. But to mature and fully open to a compassionate relationship, first we have to unknit our projections and clearly identify our ways of reacting, and then take responsibility for acting wholesomely in body, speech, and mind. And it all begins by cultivating awareness. Relationships take work. To practice awareness in relationships takes strength of heart to persevere in the face of difficulty and uncertainty. The Buddhist tradition calls us to be aware of how we respond when faced with challenges in our relationships. And the unskillful ways that we respond are classically called the three poisons: clinging, aversion, and ignorance. Heard those before, right? So clinging arises, for example, when we're fearful of damaging a relationship or losing the other. Our imperative is strong. Our imperative, or kind of strong desire that we have, is to be liked. And so we accommodate rather than squabble. We struggle to keep the other happy and the relationship waters smooth, often at the sacrifice of our own happiness. The suffering we experience when we are caught in clinging is a loss of self-worth, a devaluing of our own opinion and ideas, and sometimes that devaluing is not only from ourselves but from others, because we never speak up, afraid to rock the boat. We keep quiet, or we simply agree. And at times, when we cling so tenaciously, we may slip into a sense of helplessness and depression in our struggle to constantly try to accommodate the other. Clinging in this sense makes us all like young children trying to fulfill the expectations of their parents in order to get their love and attention. And these children never learn to give expression to their own nature. Does it make sense so far? Clinging. And again, many variations that we could talk about. So the other poison is aversion, or the pushing away, or the instinctive pushing back whenever we're challenged. In an aggressive way, we erect boundaries and dismiss the views and ideas of others when they disagree with our own views. The other is seen as separate, and aggression is accepted as necessary to protect and preserve my sense of self against the threat of the other. Aggression, and also passive aggression, I think, are simply variations of this aversion. Caught in aversion or aggression, we experience a kind of charged quality that pulls us in the direction of needing resolution. And often, in trying to force a resolution, we use hard words, harsh actions, and we simply make more suffering. And the last one is ignorance. And ignorance, I think, in the way that we can look at it here, is a turning away from all challenges, a kind of willful blindness to whatever may rock a relationship. We avoid disputes or issues by simply not paying any attention. We ignore signs of trouble. We don't hear the early warnings of tension in ourselves or in others. So in a way, ignorance is the exact opposite of mindfulness. Our task, of course, as practitioners, is to remain mindful and emotionally present in a relationship no matter what arises. Not turn away, not ignore. So there's lots more that could be said. The three poisons, clinging, aversion, and ignorance, are simply ways that we protect ourselves when faced with challenges. And sometimes they're appropriate. But they also stop us from developing mature and really intimate relationships. Of course, most of us respond to challenges perhaps with more of a mix of clinging, aversion, and ignorance. But careful awareness will point out which we habitually use in our response in our relationships. And then conscious of this, if we're really aware, I usually just space out, or I capitulate always because I don't want to cause any trouble. Often I hear people say, sometimes in the Dzogchen room and we have a meeting, I don't want to hurt the person. I'm not going to say anything. And I'm sure there's an element of truth there. Of course they don't want to hurt the person. And yet, the hurt will be there anyway. The hurt will come in another form. We need to be conscious of how we react when faced with a challenge in our relationships. And then we can question ourselves, is there a more skillful way? Is there a more skillful way I can respond? Perhaps at this moment, I can be generous. Maybe here I can stay present and really listen to this person. Maybe here I can face the issue completely. Maybe here I can assert my preference. This is what I think. And then I can listen to the other persons without the need to dominate. In the coming weeks, I'd like to talk more about not so much solutions, but just this awareness of relationships. It's a kind of crucible, I think, that we find ourselves in. A great place to practice, but not easy. So today, we're going to do a little exercise, as we usually do on Wednesdays. I'd like you to think about your own relationships. And this can be a relationship with a partner or former partner. It can be a relationship with a family member or friend. And I'd like you to question, which of the three poisons that I talked about, ignorance, aversion, and clinging, do you tend to fall back on when you're challenged in some way? Is there one or two, maybe all three? Which one, though, do you tend to, like, immediately at your fallback position? And how would you yourself kind of describe it? I mean, I use those three words, the three poisons, they're classical Buddhist terminology, but how would you describe it? How do you respond when challenged in a relationship? So that's one part. And the second part is then, what quality or qualities may you cultivate so that you can respond to that challenge rather than react? Does that make sense? Okay. So we're going to, what I thought I'd like to do is pass out some paper and pen, and we'll just take a few minutes just to jot down a few ideas that you have so it's kind of clear in your mind. And then we'll get together in small groups and kind of share that. And I'll talk more about that once you've had a chance just to jot down a few ideas.
Okay. Let's pass some paper.